thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's October 2022, and you are listening to episode 308, which is a conversation about platonic marriage. Today's guest is Anne Kennedy. She has an MDiv, and she's the author of Nailed It, 365 Readings for Angry or Worn Out People. Anne blogs about current events and theological trends at Preventing Grace on Pathos.com. Anne has written a feature article for our upcoming print issue, which is volume 45, number 2 and 3. And Anne's article is called A More Unconditional Love, Modern Iterations of Platonic Marriage. Our subscribers will be reading her article for free in their copy of the journal that will be mailed right to their door. And anyone else who's interested in reading this in-depth article, please do subscribe to our magazine, The Christian Research Journal, at our website, equip.org. Anne, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
As I noted, Anne has written a feature article for our upcoming print edition, volume 45, number 2 and 3, about the topic of platonic marriage. Now, it was really interesting. Back last year in 2021, I came across a New York Times article that was talking about the new trend of people taking friendships and kind of going to that next level. In other words, they would platonically marry their friends, and it was a relationship they were committed to for life, but it was not romantic in any way. So they would be together, you know, for better, for worse, that kind of thing. And really, it was kind of a trend of marrying your best friend without any kind of sexual union between the two people getting married. So it could be, you know, a same-sex marriage, or it could be a man and a woman getting married. It didn't have to necessarily be different genders or the same gender, but it was just somebody you considered your best friend that you would want to spend the rest of your life with without any kind of sexual involvement. So, you know, can you tell us a little bit more about platonic marriage? And actually, why is this kind of in vogue now? I mean, what is so appealing to people about this idea? Maybe it's like, oh, I'm still not married, so I might as well marry my best friend. I don't know, but it's kind of a big trend right now.
It did surprise me. That article was very vibrant. It went into the lives of particularly a couple who went viral on TikTok as proponents of platonic marriage, the new platonic marriage, which does just mean that it's marriage without any sexual involvement at all. So, of course, platonic marriage, as anyone who has thought about it at all would know, it has existed probably since marriage began to be. Couples go through times when they just are not sexually involved with each other, but it's usually not on purpose. So what's interesting about this latest trend is that people are going into it purposefully with thoughtfulness in advance, with no plans whatsoever to change their minds. And the couple highlighted in the article is two young women who are best friends. One of them self-identifies as a lesbian, and I can't remember what the other one, if she had any particular attractions. I've come across a lot of people online who call themselves asexual or aromantic, meaning they have no desire to be with anyone, but they do want marriage. And so they are engaging in this new kind of, well, it's not new, but this new iteration of platonic marriage. And I think it's back in fashion, largely because of Obergefell and the huge shift that took place in the American consciousness about the purposes of marriage. Marriage is about your own desires and feelings. And as we've come, you know, farther away from that particular moment, more and more people are discovering that they don't want to be sexually involved with people because it's so complicated and difficult, but they do want stability. They do want relationships that are not subject to the sort of catastrophes of modern love, a dating world that is very chaotic, a lot of apps, the rise of porn, a lot of troubling trends that are overtaking our culture. Many of those can be mitigated when you just decide that you're going to get married to somebody who promises never to have sex with you. So it really does make sense why this would be a trending hashtag on many forums and why more and more young people would be giving it a good look.
You mentioned that it's been around for a long time. I mean, I can think of, you know, marriage has always sometimes it's been political. If you think all the way back to Western history with different alliances, you know, between countries where they would marry. And sometimes if those women were barren, I'm sure they were in a sexless marriage. And so that's been going on for a long time where people have marriages, but yet their sexual partners are outside of the marriage. Even in the Bible, we see that with King David and his son, King Solomon. So how is this iteration different, though, than expressions of a sexless marriage in the past?
I think mostly in the past, of course, some people would, you know, right, get into an alliance, a political alliance that you knew wasn't going to be your, you know, heartfelt desire. King Solomon had hundreds of wives and hundreds of concubines. So, you know, nobody is surprised that a lot of marital unions are not, you know, the soul's and heart's desire. What's interesting about now, though, is that it is very much a personal choice. I think in the past, people would find themselves caught in a platonic marriage that maybe they, when they were young, hadn't dreamed of. It was in the sort of thing that you wake up and think, you know what I want to do is, you know, be in somebody's harem forever. But young people now, and I suppose some older people as well, are choosing it because it's the best of all possible choices for them. They get certain benefits from it that protect them, I think, from the culture. And they derive, I think, mostly stability, financial stability, emotional stability from a purposefully sexless relationship with a friend of whatever sex or gender. And so it has a very modern feel, a very, you know, America Today, modern love in the New York Times kind of feel. Nobody needs to be embarrassed about it so for example, I think in the past, if you were in a marriage where you were not sexually engaged with your partner, you wouldn't probably tell anyone that. It's not something that you would go on social media and explain to everyone. But there are a lot of, you know, YouTube clips and TikToks where people openly discuss their platonic marriages or platonic relationships and how happy they are in them and how not having sex is a very important part of that. So we're in a new and different age that's surprising, but it does have underlying reasons that help make sense of it.
If you look at social media, what are kind of the reasons that people who are in these kind of relationships give that they feel that it was best for them to be in a platonic marriage? I mean, why would they want to do that? And you said they're very open about it.
There seems to be, not maybe a huge range of reasons. I did come across the usual, well, we both got to be 40. We didn't get married. We thought we would. So now let's just marry each other. We're friends. Let's just get married. Or we both are divorced, but we need the stability, the financial stability, and we get along with each other. So let's just do that. And I came across couples like a gay man and a woman who he's friends with decide to get married because they just need the stability. But then there are also, I mean, there's a range of reasons. There's also people who feel really anxious about the sexual side of their romantic lives. They plan to have romantic, erotic relationships with people, but they really don't want those relationships to be in the marriage. They feel that that's dangerous and bad. And so in order to protect themselves or potential children, they very carefully keep all of their sexual relationships outside of the marriage that they have with their friend. I came across a young woman. Well, now she identifies as a man, and she's gone through a lot of surgeries and hormone therapies to do that. But early on in her journey, as she calls it, she met a man, and that man was attracted to her. So she got married to him. And then as she began to transition, he didn't want the marriage to end. And so they continue to be married, and he willingly gave up his sexual relationship with her because he was fine. Well, I don't know if he was fine with it, but he was willing to undergo this kind of change in her. And they, again, stability is a big factor in a lot of this, the emotional and financial stability that continues in a marriage. A lot of people want to escape the big trend of divorce that has happened through the last century. A lot of marriages, you know, and families destroyed by divorce. So young people look at that and think, well, I'm going to totally avoid all those problems and make sure that I marry somebody that will never be attracted to me, and in that way will never leave me. So it's really interesting, the reasons that people give and the unsettledness, I think, that so many people feel as they consider the institution of marriage and what it means and how they're trying to navigate that landscape.
Every time you listen to an episode of the Postmodern Realities podcast, you're probably fast-forwarding it thinking, I already subscribed to the journal. This doesn't apply to me. But actually, as a subscriber, there are two main ways that you can help us. First, of course, as I mention every time, please give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. A star review is really fast. If you have a moment, please give us a short sentence or two about why you enjoy listening to the podcast. It helps us for the algorithm, and people can find our podcast and get to know a little bit more about the Christian Research Journal. But the other big way that you can help us is to give a gift subscription to somebody. And that would be a friend or a family member or even your pastor who would enjoy reading these in-depth articles about various cultural apologetics, and Christian living sanctification type articles. So that is a really good way to help us out. And it also helps us grow our subscription base. So you can give a gift subscription easily at our website, equip.org. As always, you can always give us a tip that helps us out too. Just go to our website, equip.org, and click on journal, go to Postmodern Realities Podcast, click on an episode, and you can find the link where you can give us a tip. But really, we would really love your support in helping us to grow our subscriptions and give a gift subscription. You know, the holidays are coming up. It's already October, and I know it's a little bit early to think about it, but you might want to consider for the holidays giving your good friend, a family member, or your pastor a subscription to the Christian Research Journal for $33.50. And thank you for all the ways in which you partner with us. So one of the other terms that comes up in a discussion of platonic marriage is a relationship constellation. So can you explain to our listeners, what is a relationship constellation?
This seems to be basically polyamory, or, you know, versions of that idea, but it gets new words because this is a new time. A relationship constellation is basically all the people that you're romantically or platonically involved with, but in a deeper way than just friendship. So you can get on TikTok and watch people try to explain their various relationships with people. So a young woman, for instance, might be platonically married to one man who is romantically involved with, say, another man or another woman. And she, the sort of point in the center of the constellation, would be sexually involved with two or three other people who are mapped out. You know, you can sort of follow it kind of like a genogram, actually drawing lines from who's sexual partners with who. But it's not, I would say it's not sort of chaotic, like everybody's with everyone. It's that they carefully negotiate the parameters of their relationships, sexual or otherwise, and they work out with each other who is involved with who, to what degree, and they agree on it. And then I suppose if there are problems, they talk about them. And according to various TikToks, everybody's happy. I don't know if that's true, but that's the face that's presented. So it's a new spin on the old polyamory option.
So basically, it's another label for an open marriage, really.
A very open marriage, yeah. Very, very open.
Yes, I remember reading a couple years ago, I thought it was seemed really sad. If you read Modern Love in the New York Times, I mean, it's all kinds of things. Sometimes it has to do with love, but sometimes it has to do with, you know, love towards a parent, or it could be about, and it's about relationships, in other words. But it was like this husband and wife, they have a son, and her boyfriend got really hurt, you know, in a motorcycle accident. And, you know, he was going to go visit and took his son to go visit this person. So it's like he had his own girlfriend. He was married. They had a son. He had his own girlfriend. She had his own boyfriend who also, her boyfriend also had a wife. So the whole thing seemed really odd to be trying to navigate a you know, 12-year-old kid through, for sure. But it seems to me that the arrangement was really, an open marriage was just another word, more, you know, 1970s word for what we would call platonic marriage now. So does the word platonic marriage have anything to do with the philosopher Plato? I mean, normally we think of platonic friendships as somebody that we know really well, but we have no romantic feelings for.
I am by no means a scholar on Plato. I've read here and there, of course, but I think the term, of course, comes from the sort of ideal that many people associate with Plato. And for people in the ancient world, a love of a true and perfect form was a big thing, but then also the love that older men had for younger men factored heavily into the way that philosophy developed. I think it's kind of ironic. I don't think that the modern iteration of Platonic love has anything really to do with Plato, but I do think it's sort of fun and ironic that these various iterations of a sexless marriage are trying to grasp or find that ideal perfection that everyone longs for in any kind of relationship, but they're doing it by avoiding the one single thing that most people historically have thought was central to marriage, which was the sexual union between a man and a woman. So you can read a lot about Plato and a lot about Platonic marriage, but this new version is a sort of ironic, I don't know what the word is exactly. In my mind, it's been like a fit, a rejection of the thing that historically has been so central, or the deep and profound love that a man would have for a woman that would be expressed within marriage in a sexual union, is the thing that's being rejected as the thing that actually destroys marriage or potentially destroys marriage. I think that's sort of very interesting and tragic, but maybe a way in for the gospel ultimately, but very interesting twist.
There's also something that has been gaining influence in evangelical circles, especially in those spaces that talk about people who have same-sex attraction but want to be faithful to the gospel and to a biblical view of marriage between a man and a woman. And that is the relationships that are called spiritual friendships. So what about spiritual friendships? Because those are platonic in nature. In other words, they don't have a sexual relationship component to them, or, you know, maybe they're called kindred spirits, or if you find like a kindred spirit, a soulmate, but not in the sense of having a sexual relationship with that person.
This is an interesting sort of dovetail with the very secular idea of platonic marriage. If you read about people who are getting together with each other because they're friends and they want stability and they're getting married, they're not attracted to each other. They don't want to have sex. That's a secular version of platonic marriage that's happening today. Spiritual friendship, on the other hand, is for many people where you have a deep connection with someone, a deep love for someone. It could very easily prove to be romantic, but for gospel reasons, you're choosing that it will not be. So you want the deepest possible spiritual and emotional intimacy with someone that you cannot have sex with. And you're hoping that that will be enough, that that'll carry you through. That's the position that a lot of, I think, even, well, Catholic and evangelical Christians, there's a movement for spiritual friendship that categorizes itself as romantic, but without the actual physical part of a romance. So it's sort of the mirror of platonic marriage in a secular sense, where you are not attracted to each other, but you choose to live together for stability and friendship and intimacy. In this new Christian space, it's people who are deeply attracted to each other. They very much desire to be deeply, intimately connected to each other, but they cannot involve the physical part for theological reasons. And so that's a growing, I don't know how big it is, but it seems to be a growing movement and very attractive to people who want to be able to be same-sex attracted and have relationships and remain within the Orthodox Christian faith. It, of course, is very troubling because those kinds of emotions are very strong. And one reason why romantic love is supposed to be within the bounds of marriage between a man and a woman is because they are so strong. The desire to be with someone intimately to whom you're deeply attracted is supposed to be guarded by marriage. So outside of marriage, of course, it's very dangerous. And for same-sex people, it's very dangerous. I feel like they're asking for something that isn't appropriate and isn't given in the scriptures, but that's a big topic and one that the church really needs to grapple with in the coming years.
I also wanted to ask you about the Roman Catholic practice of Josephite marriage, which is a marriage between a man and a woman that is not sexual in nature. They, you know, are already married, but realize that they want to follow God more. So they decide to stop having sexual relations. And it seems like that practice of having a Josephite marriage, you know, kind of a version of a platonic marriage, is condoned by some priests in the Roman Catholic Church. And so can it be argued that that's a biblical option for people?
This is another really interesting phenomenon that I had not really know. I mean, I had heard of it, but I hadn't read very much about it before I started reading about platonic marriage. And it seems like there's a whole variety of reasons for which you would engage in a Josephite marriage. And it's quite an old, it derives, of course, from Mary and Joseph, who before Jesus was born, did not have sexual relations with each other. And then the Catholic Church, they would say that Mary and Joseph never had a sexual relationship. They were always chaste, or continent is another word for this kind of marriage. And so that's what many people say is the origin of this. Of course, most Protestants would probably disagree with that and say that, you know, that Mary had other children. That seems to be what the Gospels say. But that's not a first order issue, I would say. But the question of what marriage is for, even within the Catholic Church, the Catholic Church has such strong teaching about the purposes for marriage and the sacrament of marriage. Many people are, I've read a little bit, sort of maybe disagree with each other about whether Josephite marriage is more sacramental and more holy or less so than a marriage that involves a sexual encounter or that side of the relationship. So that's a big debate to which I do not feel qualified to enter into. But there are many interesting reasons why people, at least in the past, engaged in a Josephite marriage. That would be if they were not able to be properly married within the Catholic Church, if either party had been divorced and they did not want to live in mortal sin, they might make their marriage a Josephite marriage, meaning they would cease to have sexual relations with each other in order not to continue to live in sin, but not to break up their family, not to get divorced, not to make it worse. It's when you're caught in a bad situation and you don't want to have sin beget more sin. So you cease to have relations with each other in order to remain within the bounds of the church. Other people choose it because they desire to more fully pursue a relationship with God. And I think those people would probably be following Paul, who for a time he recommends that people put away their sexual relations in order for prayer, for fasting perhaps, but only by mutual consent. So both parties would have to agree, and it could be only for a particular time. And there are some documented cases of people who did that for many years and then went back to having relations with one another. So the church has sanctioned this. You can go to a priest and say, this is how we're doing things, and nobody would have to know about it except for your confessor. And you could be in the bounds of the church. Protestants, of course, don't have any sort of way of talking about this. I don't know that our view of marriage is as neatly sorted out, not neatly, but carefully delineated as it is in the Catholic Church. It was a very interesting thing, and it does overlay in an interesting way with both spiritual friendship and platonic marriage in a secular sense, as you consider how people are related to each other and what kind of choices they make, both for their spiritual lives and also for their own comfort and happiness in their familial life.
You just mentioned it briefly at the end of your comments there. So would you say that the evangelical view of spiritual friendships as a biblical way to have deep and meaningful relationships, particularly for those, as you noted, who are same-sex attracted, is that really the same thing as a Josephite marriage? Because there is no sexual component to a Josephite marriage in the Roman Catholic Church, and you know, they're hoping to pursue spirituality in a deeper way, even though they're married and not having sex.
I would say it really doesn't count as the same thing, especially for same-sex attracted people, because a same-sex attractedness is not for marriage. So two people, a man and a woman who are married to each other and who decide for whatever reason, legitimate or not, not to engage in sexual relations with each other, could still be properly married, and I think the church could still honor and bless them. Whereas people who are same-sex attracted and who were romantically inclined towards each other and who chose maybe to live together but not to have sexual relations, that still is not, that's not marriage. And that inclination for Protestants would count as a concupiscent kind of the inclination itself is wrong, whether or not you act on it. And so the desire for a deep spiritual relationship with somebody to whom you're romantically attracted, if that's a person of the same sex, that's a disordered desire. And the spiritual side of it is included in that disorder. And you cannot pursue a relationship with God in a true and complete sense, in a way that you could if you were a man and a woman who are married to each other.
Well, I guess that leads me in our discussion to ask you, what is a biblical view of marriage? Now, that might seem like an obvious question to you, but I think just culturally, and maybe even the younger generation that spends so much time on TikTok, for example, I was recently reading an article in the New York Times. I thought it was so ironic. It was saying about how TikTok has become, it's like competing with Google search to be a search engine. And so this girl in her 20s said, well, that's, you know, if you went on Google, it would take you so long to find stuff. I can find so many things in just a matter of mere seconds. And then she went on to say that she was on TikTok for 10 hours a day. So I'm not sure how that all works. But I do know that young people are on TikTok for many hours a day, including this girl who's using it as a search engine. And so I don't want to necessarily assume it's particularly if they're, you know, young Christian kids are watching all kinds of things on TikTok, that they would know what a biblical view of marriage is, even if they're in a Christian home, because sometimes those questions of marriage and sexuality are just awkward for some parents to address, so they don't really address it at all. And so kids get their information from social media.
I do think that's very much the case. It's a difficult subject, and I sort on one hand, I grieve for young people who are choosing platonic marriage because for a variety of the reasons that they are. But on the other hand, I think it is a very sane choice because it is really tough out there and there is so much confusion about how people are supposed to relate to each other. And they are right. A romantic, erotic attraction to another person is a dangerous thing. It is powerful, it's strong, and it's disruptive. And that's one reason why God says it should only be within the confines of marriage. But they're right that it's a troubling kind of experience. And so it's a wrong way to say that you should keep it outside of marriage, but it makes sense for people to say that. And I think one of the main reasons why it's so troubling is that God calls himself the husband of Israel in the Old Testament. And he wants to be with Israel. He wants a deep spiritual friendship that he likens to a marriage, a sexual relationship to Israel. He wants to be with them and he wants them to be with him in worship. When they, quote, cheat on him, when they worship false gods, they are committing, he says, adultery. And he's very angry about it. And Israel wants God to stay a little bit distant because his all-consuming love for them is so powerful and overwhelming. They just don't want to, they don't want to deal with it. They want something a little more placid, something that feels more stable. So then you come to the New Testament and Jesus takes up the role of bridegroom and he calls to himself a bride out of Israel and out of the nations. And the church is likened to a bride that's adorned for her husband. We're only supposed to have Christ as our to worship and honor and love, and everything else is supposed to come second to that. It's a rich, but it's an alarming idea. And I can see why people are anxious and shudder over it. But the joining together of erotic romantic love with the deep spiritual connection that people have with each other, and then making that about Christ and the church, is the foundation of the universe. It's the way that God communicates himself to us in the scriptures. It's the foundation of our faith, and we should hold it out. Marriage should be a picture to the world of the overwhelming love that God has for us, that Christ has for his bride. We shouldn't let go of that. It's a richer, more difficult picture than anything the world can offer, anything that you can see on TikTok, any kind of relationship cluster that you can fabricate. And it's the bedrock of life. We shouldn't give up on it. We should be able to talk about it with more joy, I think, and more honor. Most of us aren't as anxious about it as the world is, but it's such a rich and beautiful thing. We should be able to be happy about it. Otherwise, we don't have anything to offer to the world.
I think for so long, Christians have had probably an unbiblical view of sex and thinking that it's something shameful. And maybe it's because of the way that sexuality has been expressed in many broken ways. So it's hard for people to think, how do I have someone that I have this deep emotional and spiritual connection with who's a best friend, and also add on the component of being a lover to that person, to have a sexual relationship with that person? Is that an impossible thing? I mean, I think especially the way sex is portrayed now, it seems like everyone compartmentalizes what sexual expression is like. And so the idea of bringing those together does seem overwhelming, like you said, to young people, where they're like, you know what, it's too much. So therefore, I just would rather be in platonic relationships.
I do think it's impossible. In some sense, it's impossible to be both lovers and friends, because the two, a man and a woman, are so different from each other, so unalike. You are trying to come to somebody who is very other than you and try to understand who they are. And that is an impossible task. And in that way, it's like the task of trying to know God, who is so different than we are. We think he's like us, but he's not like us. And a man and a woman together, they think, oh, well, the other person must be like me. And so you treat them like you would want to be treated. And then it turns out that that's not what they wanted at all. They were very different from you. But the impossibility of it is why it's so necessary, because God comes to us and he's related to us. The man and the woman come together and they have to be friends. It's not true that friendship can't be in marriage in a romantic way. You should be spiritual friends with the person to whom you're married, and you should be erotically attracted to them, and you should be romantically involved with them. Those things have to be wound together to create the union that you have. And the impossibility of it is why it's a Christian endeavor, because things that are impossible are things that God does. And he does it in a common grace way for people who agree to be married to each other without any knowledge of him. He creates every marriage himself, and whether it honors him or not, he's the source, and he is the person who can accomplish that, especially if you ask for help. And relationships where the friend part and the lover part are joined together are, I mean, they're astonishing. They do in a mysterious way reflect Christ and the church, and they are worth striving for, even though they are so hard to accomplish.
I think it's unsettling for some Christians to think that the Bible, like you just explained, portrays God and his relationship with his people in this marriage sense, as God is the husband to his people, because it uses sexual language to talk about how people should know God and God wants to be known. I mean, that it seems very uncomfortable, I think, for some Christians.
It is uncomfortable. And I think you have to be really cautious, because it's not a one-for-one correspondence. You know, you don't want to push the metaphor too far. Many people are trying to do that right now, and that's not good either. You have to keep it within its proper perspective. But look at the way that God talks about Israel and how upset he is. He likens her constantly to an unfaithful lover, and he talks about her in a sexual way and her rejection of him and how angry he is. And I think we're supposed to look at that and see that marriage and these kinds of relationships are about worship. In the Anglican service, you say, you know, with my body, I orient myself entirely towards you, not to worship you as a god, but to be joined to you in a way that the creature is joined to the creator, or offers him or herself up to God to be a worshiping object of his glory. That is reflected or refracted within marriage, and it is very stressful. It's difficult. It's uncomfortable. And, you know, it's interesting to me, evangelicals have tried, I think, to strip some of this sort of physicality out of worship by making all the spaces very clean and bright and not so cluttery looking, because it's easier to contemplate a God who is, you know, on his throne in heaven, who's transcendent, who's not going to come down here and muck up things with us and relate to us personally and get into the nitty gritty of our lives. That's so stressful, the way that married people are supposed to do. So, yeah, I think, though, that evangelicals need to recover a more entrancing and a richer view of marriage if they're going to be able to talk to the culture at all and invite people into this kind of estate.
And so could a platonic marriage ever be a reflection, as the Bible talks about, of Christ and his church? Is it possible without the sexual component to a marriage?
Well, I think every marriage can reflect it in one way or another. And of course, there are situations in which people cannot be with each other sexually.
And right. I'm not talking about someone whose spouse, you know,
right,
got in an accident and no longer can have a sex part of their life. You know, that part of their chapter is closed. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who intentionally enter in to what they would consider a marriage and never, ever have a romantic or sexual component to it.
I mean, I think if those people ended up being Christian, God could work through all of their brokenness and still show himself to the world. But I don't, in much the same way that I think people who choose to get married and just choose outright not to have any children are not honoring the purposes of marriage and are not glorifying God and not displaying his glory in the world by their choices, I think it's a similar kind of thing. Of course, bad things happen, but to the degree that you can, you should do things the way that God wants you to do them. And that means offering yourself up to the other person with the totality of who you are. And so, yeah, I don't think Christians should engage in this kind of relationship on purpose. And people in the world who do could be rescued out and perhaps be redeemed and enter into the church and discover a more complete view of marriage. But it's not a whole thing. It's not entirely real. It has fragments of it. It's like a vestige of marriage, but it's not the real thing.
And what about those people who are, you know, who talk about on TikTok or just more younger people, you know, with all the different iterations of how you identify, who would identify themselves as asexual? They don't have any romantic inclinations towards anyone. Should those kind of folks who identify that way or find themselves that way, if they are Christians, enter into a marriage?
That's such an interesting idea, that the asexual, I think it has its own part of the flag that's used, or it's flown in many places around here. It's an identity that you can claim for yourself, that you're just not, you're aromantic or you're asexual, you're not attracted to people in any sexual way. Well, that's also true about humanity through time. Many, many people have been married for a variety of reasons to other people, often just because they needed to have children. And they were not swept away in the romance of it all. They, you know, maybe they never enjoyed the sexual act. That's one of the parts of the fall. But it's a strange thing to claim that as an identity, also as a fixed identity, because of course a person can change over time. You may not be attracted to somebody, but you might change. You might become attracted to someone. I can see why you would really not want to be attracted to anyone in this current climate, with TikTok and porn being so prevalent and the expectations that people have about what sex should be like. I think it's a very, very safe way of ordering your life. So it makes sense, again, but Christians shouldn't identify that way any more than they should identify any part of themselves with their sexuality. It's not an immutable thing. You know, our attractions and desires can change over time. And when we counsel people, we say from the get-go, when you marry someone, you should, the first day that you're married, you should begin to pray that you will, your attraction for that person will grow and grow. And you should pray it every day, because if you don't, it might not be there. God gives good gifts to those who ask for them. And so you should on purpose pray to be attracted to your partner. And if you're not attracted to anyone at all, you could pray that God would bring someone to you that you would be attracted to. He can do that. And you could marry that person, and provided that it's somebody of the opposite sex and that, you know, within the proper bounds of marriage. But no, it's a great tragedy that people feel constrained to identify themselves that way, out of a sort of bleakness, I think, of our technological landscape.
Well, on a much lighter note, finally, I have a couple of fun rapid-fire questions for Anne, who is indeed married. How long have you been married, and where did you get married?
I've been married 21 years, and I got married in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, thank you, Anne, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
You've been listening to episode 308 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Anne Kennedy. She has written a feature article based on our discussion in our upcoming print issue, volume 45, number 2 and 3. Her article is called A More Unconditional Love, Modern Iterations of Platonic Marriage. And our subscribers can read her article for free when they receive their copy. Otherwise, if you'd like to read this article, please subscribe to our journal at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Anagraff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.